Welcome to the Pro Photographer Interview Series, episode number 22. This is Shamira Young with you from Zenjoyable.com. Today I chat with freelance photographer Michelle Westmoreland about her successful career that has spanned decades. We also touch on some actionable tips that every photographer needs to know about keeping their photography business profitable. A bit on Michelle. She's a freelance photographer with a focus on underwater conservation, storytelling, and commercial assignments. Her wide range of skills include worldwide travel, lifestyle, and underwater photography. Her years of diving have led Michelle to being an active proponent of marine conservation issues. In addition, she's passionate about cultural preservation as well. Awesome! Now, before we get to the interview, very quickly, I want to let you know about our Photography Business Essential Bundle. It's 4 weeks of freebies delivered every 7 days to your email inbox, and this is available on our website, Zenjoyable.com. The first thing you'll get is the interactive PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. Now, the information in this ebook was gathered from my own mistakes, of course, but also just in the conversations that I've had with different photographers, including the photographers from our interview series. So, in this PDF e-guide, you're going to get a wealth of information compiled from many different photographers. Now, after this e-guide, every 7 days for 4 weeks, you'll get a new freebie that'll help propel your photography business forward. Head on over to Zenjoyable.com and you'll see that offer on the homepage and also in the sidebars. And like I said, it's totally free. All right, it's interview time. Let's get to the good stuff. Hi, everybody. I'm here with Michelle Westmoreland, freelance professional photographer with a focus on underwater conservation, storytelling, and commercial assignments. Michelle, thank you so much for just sitting down and chatting with us.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's really quite an honor or privilege to be able to be interviewed by your organization. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to be chatting with you. I've looked at your work online, and what you're doing is really, really interesting.
It is. It's very interesting. It's very diverse and at times challenging. But as photographers, we all do like challenges.
You got that right. Well, first of all, I really want our audience to learn about you. So just give us an overview of yourself and your background as far as your education, schooling, work experience, and just how you ended up where you are today.
Well, actually, it's a little bit of a different spin because I didn't start out in photography. I've been shooting professionally now for 20 years, but the first half of my career life, approximately 20 years, was in commercial real estate, working for major corporations, completely off the edge. But I've always did have a fascination with photography. That was a passion and actually, you know, a hobby.
Very good. And so I'm curious, with the commercial real estate piece, were you showing properties to people, or how specifically were you involved in that?
I worked for companies such as Burger King Corporation in their real estate division, looking for site location, negotiated long-term leases, a lot of the facets of any kind of retail location real estate. So it was primarily a commercial background. And when I joined one of the major corporations, I moved to Miami, Florida from California. So I had to give up my snow skiing as a hobby and took up scuba diving. And that was well over 30 years ago. Once I got in the water, then I got really interested in underwater photography and it became quite obsessive.
Really? So was it kind of, I'm trying to picture this, once you get under the water and you get literally your feet wet, was it just that it was so beautiful around you that you had to find a way to capture what you were seeing?
Absolutely. You know, the marine life is so incredibly diverse around the world. But even in South Florida, you know, there's those beautiful opportunities. And it was a place for me to find peace and solace and something even, you know, more challenging like photographing underwater. And, you know, corporate life many years ago afforded me. That was one of the fortunate things about being in a corporate environment is that it could afford me the money to go out and purchase equipment. It could afford me, my weekends were mine, and I could spend all my time learning and studying underwater photography and develop those skills. And once I got into that, I knew that I did not want to spend the second half of my career life reading 100-page lease documents. It just wasn't going to happen. So, you know, because I've always been adventurous, always been a sports enthusiast, always loved the outdoors and nature. So what the corporate environment and my schooling with a business degree taught me was a lot of the skills that many young photographers don't really attach themselves to. They don't understand that marketing is an important part of their business. Understanding a P&L, you know, what is a P&L? What is a profit and loss statement? And those are the key things that are going to help you succeed in business. And I think it was that corporate background that, you know, helped me formulate a business plan and really understand what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, and what it was going to take financially and time-wise to make it successful.
You know, I'm so glad that you bring up the business aspect of photography, because that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to start interviewing professional photographers. I think so many creatives, myself included, we are so focused on, in general, taking great photos that we forget that there's a whole nother side of running your business, which is actually running the business and dealing with the numbers and those things. So, you know, I almost want to say, because of your corporate and business background, you have a leg up on many people, many photographers.
And you know, it did. It was the leg up because, again, it got me into the industry. And fortunately, I, you know, the timing couldn't be better because 25, 30 years ago, it was optimal time to get into stock photography. And so there were a lot of, you know, great opportunities. The marine life and underwater world niche was still young. It was a good niche to be in. And again, building that business plan and, you know, marketing and the ability to network, knowing how to network, was so important for me to be able to take a time period and be able to quit the day job.
And that's always an exciting, maybe scary time as well for some people.
It is, and it can be, and it can also be very rewarding.
Well, I'm curious then, what area of photography would you call your expertise right now?
Well, I'm known for my underwater photography. That's how I developed a reputation. After, you know, as I said, doing the networking across the board, getting involved with organizations that, you know, whether it was the Dive Association and going to their various functions, approaching the magazines at the time to tell, you know, with concepts on my first stories and showing my skills. Those are all of the things that got me set up. So I'm noted for underwater photography, but I'm very, very diverse. And I really, over the past few years, have been more captivated by photographing indigenous culture, you know, more particularly in Papua New Guinea. So I think that's a wonderful, I don't know, it's been a calling.
Definitely. And I know you're working on a very fascinating documentary right now, and we will definitely touch on that a little bit later in the interview for sure. My next question for you, how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot?
Well, I think there's a variety of, you know, because I am so diverse, and that's one thing I would like a lot of photographers and young photographers out there to really take a look at. Make sure you are diverse, because not only did I do underwater photography, I started doing lifestyle and more commercially driven work, even if it dealt with the diving community. So I would utilize people in my images, divers, whether it's, you know, the topside elements, resort elements, things like that. And those are the kind of shoots that actually did keep me alive in several downturns, and especially in 2008. So diversifying, I think, is incredibly important for every photographer to think about. Even though they might be passionate about, like I was, the marine life or wildlife and nature, make sure you have those skills that will take it to a different level so that you can, you know, have an avenue of a more diverse income stream.
Excellent. So when you, for example, approach a magazine and you pitch an idea, I'm assuming then that you're not taking the photos until after they okay that idea and say, this is something that we would be interested in?
Correct. Yeah. Usually when you approach a magazine or, you know, whether it's an online-based magazine or a print publication, of course, those are dwindling daily, there are always stories that need to be told. So the research is really important if you are to get an assignment on a particular area that might be of interest to that specific publication. And so it takes a lot of work. You get yourself inspired. It could be, you know, if it's a story for a dive publication, is it in a particular part of the world I'm going to? What's special about it? What's unique in, as far as the marine life? What's unique as far as an experience for the reader who probably is a diver? So all of those things have to be looked at. I do commercial shoots on liveaboard dive boats, and that works really well in combining, you know, both doing a magazine story and developing an income stream. And it's the one thing that saved me during the 2008 crash that kept me going out there, because things were getting slim. Most of the dive community, especially those with large liveaboard dive boats that might take 16 or 20 passengers, and they're in a variety of part of the world. The one thing they were missing, and this was because of research and observation, was that their marketing images for their boat interiors, you know, they all have to tell a story. You know, what's their vessel look like? How much fun is it? What's the service like? What's the food like? And all of those things are really important. But most of these companies had very amateurish, I call them happy snap type images, marketing their $1 million product. And so I developed a program that could give me kind of some duality. I could shoot their marketing images and I could also cover a magazine story. And so it definitely helped me survive some very precarious downturns in the economy.
Very nice. You know, I'm jotting down notes as you're talking, and I'm filled up a half of a page already. You're saying some really great things, especially about researching an assignment and just finding out what your potential client wants. I think that's something that many creatives sometimes forget to ask. In episode 21 with photographer Char Crail up on Zenjoyable, we touched on just finding out what your client is looking for. A lot of times it's what they need and also what they want. I know many artists and photographers, and I was one of them years ago, you know, the mistakes I have not made, where you produce a body of work and it's great, but you find out that nobody wants it. Or I'm guilty of this many times over. I'll produce a piece, say a photograph, and, you know, for me personally, it holds a ton of meaning, but then trying to find someone after the fact that it fits to can be a great deal tougher than doing research to find out what they want, or sometimes simply just asking specifically can make your job a whole lot easier.
Yes, it can. And you want to, as a photographer, you want to make your what you create desirable to that client, not what's just desirable to you. You know, I mean, there's a lot of absolutely fabulous, talented underwater photographers and nature photographers out there, but again, what saved me is having the ability to shoot lifestyle, which includes people and interiors and all those kind of things. And what was really interesting, I learned from those commercial types of shoots, unique ideas and things that I could take to the parts of my photography that are my passion. So it's always a learning curve. Always.
That is very true. Always learning, and it's a learning experience through and through. Well, the next question I have for you may be a bit tricky, but in your opinion, what makes a good photo stand out from just an average photo?
You know, that's a really good question, because I think today what has happened, those lines are becoming more and more blurred, especially to the viewers, because there is so much content. There's so many, you know, so many visuals up there through all the social media. And I think people have kind of dumbed down a little bit on what makes a strong image. You know, it might be fun to them, but really does it resonate to the to a viewing public? And we're overwhelmed. We're completely overwhelmed with visuals. I find that really sad. And hopefully that curve will change, like in a lot of industries, you know, where it'll circle back around and there'll become an appreciation. But what I believe what makes a good photo is that, one, you know, it's the basic technical issues. Is it well composed? Is it well lit? You know, Photoshop and all of the different programs don't fix a bad photo to begin with, unless it's up, you know, structured perfectly, you know, when you snap that image. But I think the second thing that comes along is that, does that image tell a story? What does it say to the viewer? It could create a whole variety of reactions. One where it's kind of an abhorrent, oh, I can't deal with looking at it because it's made an environmental issue that, you know, hits home, or wildlife that's been slaughtered, you know, those kind of things that create that kind of powerful impact. And then there's the other side that creates the beauty side, but you've got to balance the two. You know, those images that make someone smile, what does it resonate to them? So I think it's telling a story that is probably what will separate, you know, the good photo, solid photo, to an average photo.
Very good. And that's something that I'm hearing many photographers say in this series, because it is true. You can tell a very intricate, complicated story in a single photograph. And that's one thing that I love about photography. Or you can tell a story over a series of photographs. So we have so much freedom within that.
And, you know, we were talking about just, you know, that kind of thing. And as a fellow, I think one of the organizations I'm most proud to be a part of is International League of Conservation Photographers. And it is about the power of storytelling in still imagery, because it's those memorable images taken, you know, or a series of images that can change people's minds. And with ILCP, it's all about that. You know, we cannot change those minds. We cannot address issues and have it impact the viewer to take action unless you have a powerful visual storytelling ability.
Absolutely. And we're such a visual society as it is. You have the one hand where we are being overwhelmed and bombarded with visuals. But on the other hand, photography is still such a powerful tool to raise awareness, especially in things that are going on in other countries, for example. I think there's so many things that we are not aware of, especially in America, where we kind of have our little safety bubble. There's so many issues going on outside of our country, our young country. And you know, one of the main ways to really raise awareness is through visual imagery like photography or even video.
Yes. And I'd like to kind of step back on a question, but in talking about that diverse skill I was talking about, doing the underwater, being noted for that, and having the commercial side, I was selected to be the lead photographer at ILCP for one of our programs with Living Oceans Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it is a vessel that's going around the world with a group of scientists to take coral reef samples. Well, they wanted to tell a story, and here's that creation of a full story. The reason why I was selected is because they had two goals that they wanted to accomplish. One was to have somebody good in underwater photography to capture the beauty, you know, of marine life in a specific area. But the other thing they needed to tell the story was about the vessel, the researchers, the scientists, and the crew on board. What is life like? And they needed somebody who had that ability to shoot people in kind of a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So that was a two-week-long assignment that I got to the French Polynesia on board this amazing 220-foot research vessel to capture both interiors, you know, scientists working, looking at, you know, through microscopes, and then diving underwater and capturing images of them doing their scientific research on a coral reef. So by diversifying my skills, that's why I won that assignment.
That is a perfect example. And how exciting does a project like that sound? Oh my goodness.
It was.
Excellent.
It was an incredible assignment.
Excellent. And you know, speaking of underwater photography, I'm super, super curious. What is your typical go-to gear that you like to carry with you on an underwater photo shoot?
Oh, I dream of the times that I get to go on an assignment that doesn't involve the dive gear. I mean, to me, that's such a pleasure. Even though there's a lot of equipment, it certainly pales in comparison to the equipment that I have to take along on a dive assignment, underwater assignment. I have to have not only, you know, my standard DSLR systems, which is a Canamark, two Canamark 3s. I keep one for the topside use and one that goes in a CCAM housing. Mm-hmm. So you've got an aluminum housing. You have underwater strobes. You have strobe arms. You have ports, you know, for macro and for wide angle. So it is a plethora of equipment to take with me. And that's not including the dive gear. You know, I have to have my buoyancy compensation device, my regulator, my mass snorkel fins, and all of that. But yeah, it does add up. But what do I typically use for my underwater photography as far as lenses are concerned? The go-to lens is my 16-35 f2.8. Mm. I always have a macro lens, whether it's a 50 or a 100 macro, because of all the interesting creatures. And then my lens that I love being creative with is the 8-15 millimeter fisheye.
Oh.
In an underwater environment, it is a magical piece of equipment that can help tell stories, you know. And even in my Living Oceans Foundation, I created an image because of the research that I wanted it to say, what if the Earth were made of coral? Because that's what their project and their mission is about, is the coral health of coral reefs. By utilizing my 8-15 millimeter fisheye, but racked to 8 millimeters, it gives it that circular pattern. Mm-hmm. I found the most pristine reefs I could take, added one of the researchers, and what it looks like is the blue planet made of coral. So those are the kind of creative things you can do. And I love using that fisheye underwater.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And I'm looking at your photo, a photo of you on your website, and it's either you're about to go into the water or you just came out. Your hair looks dry. Maybe you're about to go in. And you're surrounded by all this equipment. And I'm wondering, okay, you only have two arms. So when you're down there, how are you able to carry the different strobes? And, you know, you have one body lens that you take down with you, you said. But even the different lenses, how do you manage all that?
Well, you don't. I mean, you have to make your choice before you get into the water what system you're going to set up, what type of lens you're going to use. Mm-hmm. And so you make a choice whether you're going wide angle or macro. Of course, the strobes are underwater strobes. They're attached to the housing. Everything turns into a unit. Now, the unit stretched out is almost as big as I am. but it's slightly negative on buoyancy, so it's not that bad in an underwater situation. I think the most important part is, you know, for people who are considering underwater photography, is to be a good diver first before you put a camera in your hands.
For sure. I know I would need to get a little more comfortable in the water before I tackle something like that. My next question for you, what is your favorite photography accessory other than your camera and why?
And this has, obviously, they can't be used in an underwater situation. Well, in cave situations. But my favorite to take in the field, both for my commercial shooting and a lot of times now for my cultural portraiture, are my pocket wizards, good flash units, and a set of small portable light modifiers. Those to me, are a lot of fun. I mean, they really help separate. When I'm doing portrait photography, it is a lot of fun in the field to be creative in how you backlight, front light, you know. And then, of course, in the commercial venue, when I'm having to photograph, you know, boat salons and cabins, I need to have those kind of modifiers and lights set up so that I can light dark corners and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of the more fun equipment.
Excellent. And, you know, I think really knowing how to use that equipment effectively is something that sets you and other photographers apart from just anybody who has a camera or a camera phone or a cheaper DSLR.
That pop-up flash, you know, I'm sorry. That's what it looks like on film. And I'm still, in my opinion, I'm still pretty novice when it comes to using light sources, external light sources and modifiers. It is a constant learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping soon there's some things I have in mind that I want to work on for my cultural photography that I'm hoping I have some time coming up where I go in the backyard and do some experimenting with my photo assistant and play with some of the lighting setups. Always something to learn. And there's great people out there to learn from.
Oh, definitely. You know, like you said, the instant pop-up flash, you can spot that a mile away. You can look at it and tell.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, next, let's talk a bit about your post-production workflow. Can you describe what your post-process workflow is like as far as software that you use?
Well, there's only one software, in my opinion. That's Lightroom. it is an absolute workhorse. And of course, Adobe over the years has really, with the help of other significant people helping with their IT, have developed a program that I don't think you can live without, especially if you have a huge folders of images that need to be managed, maintained, if you're getting submission requests. That is the only software I recommend to anybody that asks.
Definitely. And what's funny is when I first started this interview series, I was not in Lightroom too much. I was primarily a Photoshop person, and I still love it. But as far as going through folders and folders of photos and filtering through thousands, I would just suck it up and spend hours and hours going through that stuff, trying to organize it on my own and, you know, jumping in and out of Photoshop. And by this point, I've definitely learned that Lightroom, like you said, it is a workhorse, and it can really help your workflow.
It really does. And why would you want to create large TIFFs that just take, you know, more storage when you can work effectively through Lightroom? I mean, the only times that my assistant and I use Photoshop actually is in, like, on a commercial shoot. If we have to do HDR, if we have to do some, you know, other lighting issues, it's all of that kind of work, and it's used sparingly, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we don't go to the Photoshop as much. Everything can be created if you have a good solid image,
right?
And you have a quick submission call and you need to fill, you can generate that image in a timely fashion that's absolutely workable. Plus, finding your images, you know, the archiving is so wonderful. Now, the issue is being diligent about when you bring your images into your catalogs, you know, how you set them up. And I think that's all kind of a personal choice, you know, mm-hmm. what is best for your organization. I particularly like, because most of my submissions and most of my imagery is based on location, mm-hmm. I tend to set up my folders and naming conventions based on country, you know, the location within the country, and then a naming, you know, the file number. That way I can access much quicker. I think the hardest part is keeping up with your, you know, your captioning, your keywording, all of those kind of things. We might spend 15% of our time in the field, and the rest is keywording and captioning.
Yes.
It is a huge job, and one that I have to be honest and say that I am behind a little bit on that workflow process.
Well, trust me, I feel your pain there.
Yes. But I think usually what I try and do in the field is I do very little work in the field on my laptop. I mean, it's just all it is a vehicle to view, you know, collect, you know, back up my images to external hard drives and do a really hard edit, you know, getting rid of the obvious. What it helps me with is being able to, as I go from one location to another or from one dive location to another, I can at least get that information input into that series of images so that I don't forget. And that's very helpful. So when I import into my workhorse, big computer system here where we do all of the big management, then at least I have that information there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Great. Well, next, I'm curious, let's talk about the running of your photography business. What would you say is the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself? A loaded question.
I can only say that the first thing that comes to mind is being profitable. You know, as I said earlier in the interview, I'm so lucky to have, you know, a business background, which helped me understand, you know, the importance of impacts to your profit and loss, where you need to cut back, when you can afford to spend. It's a challenge, but it that to me is the first. You have to be profitable. You've got to pay your bills or you're not a business.
Right.
So the new days, ever since the crash, there's so many things that have impacted my business. I mean, I have been with 7 stock agencies over the past 20 years and, you know, some of the biggest names. And early on, during the heydays of stock, it was a very supportive industry to be in. 85% of my income stream were from my stock agencies.
Wow.
So that afforded me to make a lot of choices in self-assignments. What was the stock industry really desiring? When we started seeing the fall of the stock industry, I had to take a look at where the impacts were coming from. And, you know, you could never measure any one portion because there were so many different ways that stock was now being devalued, from the crash where advertisers were not licensing images anymore, print publications were going out. You had different business models going from rights managed where, you know, we were proudly paid a reasonable amount, in my opinion, a value for our images, to royalty free down to micro stock. And, you know, now with the plethora of people giving away their work. So that's impacted it. So you have all these different things. As I said, 85% of my income stream in the past was from the stocks. It is now down to 15% of my income stream. So where do you make up the rest of that business? And that's where understanding how to run a business and where you need to go to start developing new business models within your own company is really, really important.
Definitely. And what would you say, what have you found to be the most effective techniques as far as getting new assignments and projects and spreading the word about your business?
You know, I don't think that portion has ever changed, and it is networking. If you're not out there networking, talking to people, I don't care whether it's engaging them through social media, engaging them through, you know, different conferences or trade shows, though, that's the way that you continue to build a business and keep people interested in your work. Now, you know, there's other marketing avenues. I've tried a lot. I've tried the portfolio postcard mailing to editors and all of that. Some people it works very well for my type of narrow niche market, it really didn't work for. So, but it's that human connection, and we don't want to lose that and those face-to-face opportunities. So I firmly believe in networking, both through social media, emailing, but also on a personal level.
I would even say that's a solid principle, networking, as opposed to a technique. I mean, I like to ask about techniques that photographers are using, but certain things do become obsolete, especially with the changing landscape of the U.S. economy. And so knowing a solid principle like networking and not just being your own island, I really believe that can make or break a business.
You're absolutely right.
And it's funny because you mentioned, it's always interesting talking to people about what happened to them when, you know, everything kind of crashed 2007, 2008, and you were talking about a lot of print publications going out of business. And that's absolutely true. At that time, I was with a publishing company, and it literally overnight, they were telling us things were great, and then overnight, they laid off everybody. And it was, and everyone has stories like this, no matter what field they're in. And then it becomes, well, how do you survive? What next step do you take? And so what you were saying, I love it about having to diversify out from stock photography, with it being 85% of what you were making down to 15%, and just being diverse in your personal photography skills and being able to get out there and find those other assignments. It's so important.
And it's becoming more and more competitive in the assignment photography world, because that's, you know, the one way that you know, people can at least get into the field by obtaining good assignments. So it's very, very competitive. I find other, you know, avenues for income streams becoming more and more of a challenge every day as well, because the photographers who have had strong businesses are looking at the same thing. So they're leading tours, they're teaching. So all of those markets are now becoming a little bit more saturated. You need to be the better paperclip or whatever it is in that particular genre, you know, whether it's teaching, leading tours, shooting commercially, everything. You've got to have something that's strong, and you have to be knowledgeable about it.
Exactly. And even like you said about getting the image right in your camera and not relying on Photoshop, I mean, taking a good solid photo is key, you know, as well as being able to tell a story with your photos, because you'll have to stand out in some way from the zillion other photographers out there.
Yeah. And I think you've heard this said many, many times before, and from many of the photographers that you have interviewed, Photoshop is not the answer. And I can tell how many times I've had clients say, well, hey, I know that I didn't replace these light bulbs. I know that I didn't, you know, things that you ask when you go into a photo shoot. Mm-hmm. Please make sure that all of these things are working. Yeah, you can just fix it in Photoshop. The resulting answer is that, well, but I'm trying to save you money, because if I have to do that, I'm going to have to charge you, you know, for that time spent in that post-production, as opposed to having it captured correctly to begin with.
Exactly.
So help me help you.
Exactly. I love the way you put that. Coming from the point of wanting to save them money, who can't appreciate that, you know?
Exactly.
Great. Well, next, let's talk about some lessons that you've learned over the years. What's the most common mistake that you see professional photographers make, or that you yourself have made over the years?
Wow. You know, I'm fortunate to be engaged with a lot of very successful photographers who have had businesses operating quite well and operating from a business perspective. And I still, you know, I'm going to go back. I might sound like a broken record, but it's all about how to operate the business, what your understanding of a business is. And you can be the greatest shooter in the world, but if you don't know how to run it, then it's not going to work. I guess, you know, I'm trying to look for a mistake, and right now we can all blame, some people tend to blame themselves, but I think we have a very, very tough market that is forcing us to think in new ways. And it is digging out, for the professional photographers, it's digging out of those old habits and looking for the new ones that will help them survive until there's a time for them to say, gee, I get to leave the work world. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I'll never quit shooting, but there will become a time when I don't have to worry about that business side of it. And I think it's going back and recreating, looking at all of the new business ideas that are out there. If you've been shooting for 30 years, it's easy to be stuck back in old patterns.
Definitely. And, you know, the whole operating the business, it's the marketing, the finance, I mean, taxes. You know, I was talking to a photographer recently who forgot to account for her taxes. That's a shock. That hurts.
Seriously?
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I've done that myself the first year. And that's the lesson that you learn very quickly after that. Just the basics of business you have to be on top of. I've seen some amazing photographers and artists just work that blew me away, and yet they don't know how to run the business. They don't know how to get their work out there so that it's seen by the right people, and even networking with other people. It really is a constant learning process, but it's imperative to having a successful business.
It really is. And if you really can't, you know, not everybody has those skills. Nobody has the ease of meeting new people. You know, creatives tend to sometimes be, you know, hold within themselves a lot more. So, you know, maybe as a young person, you can align yourself with a friend to help build a mutually beneficial business. You know, someone that has marketing skills, someone that has some business background, and find a way to make it a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't do everything on your own. You know, that's one thing I did learn in corporate, was that team members are really important, because if you start holding on to projects and everything and keeping it to yourself, that is the first way to start destroying what you're trying to build. It's got to come from a team effort. So look for people out there. You know, if you're young and in school, find people that have different skills that you can work together with. I'm always looking for people. Even today, interns that have new ideas. My photo assistant is more than assistant. Trust me, she can run my business. Sandy has been with me for 10 years. She is 30. She's still in tune to what the younger generation is looking at in film and all of these new tips, techniques, and things that come out when it comes to IT work. And if Sandy left tomorrow, I'd be looking for someone in her age group with her skills. Mm. Because those are the ones that are going to help me through, you know, tough times.
Absolutely. And what is the one thing you wish you knew before you became a professional photographer?
You know, and it has nothing to do with the business side of it, because I had that. I think what I'm looking back now and saying to myself, I wish I knew more about the profession of filmmaking. Shooting film, shooting video, even if that was not what I was going to turn to totally as a profession. You know, hindsight is 20/20, and today it's all about mixed media. And I wish I had better skills in filmmaking, because what I'm learning now for my major, you know, documentary film and shooting now in the field, if I had basis to it, it would be a little bit easier understood. But we categorize, we put ourselves in niches. Well, I'm a still photographer, I'll always be a still photographer. You know, there's no, you know, no way I can, you know, do both, which is a point, because there are two different ways to capture visuals. You know, one is a moment in time, the other one is time and motion. So those take different skills. But having basics, I really wish I had a little bit more filmmaking education.
It's so interesting you say that, because photography and shooting video are two areas that can be different, but there are quite a few times where they do overlap. I mean, even looking online at job postings, you'll see people who are looking for a photographer, but also someone who can shoot video. And a lot of times they'll want that in the same person. Or you'll have someone shooting a wedding and they're taking some footage with their DSLR camera. And it's like knowing one and the other, they definitely feed into each other.
They do feed into each other, but there's a part of me that goes back in that kind of instance. If you're shooting a wedding, if you're shooting a major project, that whether you're using DSLRs to capture both video and still, I think there's something to be said for having teamwork and team effort, because you cannot switch your brain. At least I can't. Maybe the younger generation now who are being immersed in thinking with both sides of capture are going to have the ability to do it. But today, if you've been trained in one or the other, to be able to do both in the field or at an event and switch back and forth, to me, what I've seen, and I've seen in my work, is you can't capture a lot of mediocre of both because there are two different ways of storytelling. So the most successful people I've seen in good, you know, wedding where there's video and still required, I've seen the team. I've seen one who captures the video and one who specializes in the stills, and then they make it work. Yes, they charge more money, but then you're getting quality product back. It's the same for my commercial people. If they want me to shoot video snips, it's going to take me twice as long for that job. Hence, it's going to be, you know, more of a day rate. And then you have post-production on it. So you have to think, you know, clearly about, you know, the mixed media side of business. But I wish I had more better filmmaking skills.
Well, I will second that about working on a team. I know even for weddings in particular, that can be its own beast. That I even recommend, if you're signed up as a photographer to shoot a wedding, that you have an assistant. I know that's literally what saved my buns the first time I ever did a wedding shoot. Because, and I've mentioned this before, I came down with the flu the morning of. And there's no canceling on a wedding where you had these details worked out 6-9 months in advance. And, you know, in that instance, they didn't ask for any video footage. But I know for a fact that for at least the bigger weddings, even handling just the photography yourself can be quite a beast.
You have to have the assistant to have the proper lighting, because you're going to have that availability. You have to have that assistant to move those lights around for you, who knows you, who works with you.
Right.
Again, it's a matter of convincing the client, you know, what is going to give them the best product and, yeah, what it's going to cost. So, but I truly believe in teamwork.
Right on, definitely. And is there a particular photography resource, a tool, online course or book or even software that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Well, now that I've learned about your operations and that, I'm certainly going to be checking it out much more often. I am on the road a lot. I come home. I have a limited amount of time. Yes, I do need to learn. I try and learn. And there are so many great tutorials and teachers out there today. I tend to use what's easiest for me and close to home. One is Creative Live. Definitely a very, very strong location to learn. You can not only watch them on their live webinars and you know, training sessions on a gazillion different subjects, but you can also, you know, purchase to watch. And sometimes I do. We'll take the material with me to watch on an airplane. The other location I go to, because it has such a variety of things, whether it's, you know, business programs and things like that, or photography, is lynda.com. That's been an easy one for me, because I can get an annual subscription. Myself and my assistant can sit here and watch when we have the time. So those are easy avenues. It's all time driven.
Very good. And like you said, continuous education, it's indispensable. You have to continuously keep up on the new trends or learning new skills or new software, just trying to keep on top of things to stay profitable.
And it's mind-boggling. This brain can only absorb so much.
Well, that makes two of us, definitely. Next, let's talk about the current projects that you have yourself involved in, as well as where our listening audience can find you. Did you want to talk about the current projects that you're involved in right now?
Well, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, one of the organizations that I'm involved with and occasionally go on location on assignments is with International League of Conservation Photographers. And that's my passion. That's where my heart is. And it's about empowering, you know, different issues with strong photography. And they do it not only from the environmental, wildlife, landscape, you know, that side, but they also have a side that talks about the preservation of culture and the respect for culture. So, you know, it combines both areas that I am so passionate about. You know, it's marine life, wildlife, and it's people.
Very good.
So the project I'm most engaged with, and is probably, for a lack of a better term, I think of it as my legacy project, is Headhunt Revisited. And, you know, it was a total step away from most of the things I was doing at the time being. And it's all about art, it's all about culture, and it revolves around a place that I'm on the planet that I'm most passionate about, and that's Melanesia, more particularly Papua New Guinea, where I've traveled 29 times. So it's an amazing project. The goal of it is to be a documentary film, a book, and a re-exhibit of some of the beautiful artwork that Caroline Meidinger did in the 1920s. And Caroline is my star and my subject. Let me see if I can find something very quickly, because
sure.
My one page condenses what it is this project is about. Anybody that says documentary film is easy, I got to tell them, think twice. It is one of the most challenging. It also can be one of the most rewarding if you have something with substance to it. Okay, my passion project titled Headhunt Revisited actually has nothing to do with my skills as an underwater photographer, but what my underwater photography did was introduce me to a place on the planet that I'm very passionate about, and that's Papua New Guinea, located in Melanesia. And it's an amazing place. The biodiversity of the marine life is unmatched. Yet, over the years of traveling there, like I said, for 29 times, past 20 years, I began to raise my head above the surface of the water and starting to notice the people. They depend on the health of those reefs and those oceans for everything in their lives. And what I noticed further on was this is a highly individualistic community, because there is almost 1,000 different tribes in Papua New Guinea and over 800 different languages spoke there, not dialects. So here you have this balance of diverse marine life and one of the most diverse culturally in the world. It just intrigued me. But what Headhunt Revisited does, it's a documentary about the power of an American woman artist who traveled there with another female friend to paint portraits of the indigenous peoples before Western influence impacted their traditions and their body decor. She did this between 1926 and 1930, and it took quite a few years to do the research, many years to do the research, many years to locate her paintings. But when I did, then I knew there was a story that had to be told. And the bottom line is telling her story and going back on an expedition that happened in 2005, where we retraced her footsteps for 2 months. We used a liveaboard dive vessel, all friends of mine in the dive industry. I took a film crew, I took an anthropologist, and we went to the same villages where Caroline went and engaged them in conversation, taking long prints of the paintings. It was an amazing experience. So by bringing this all out into public via a documentary film, via a book, we're telling a story. You know, the hook is Caroline because she was, you know, a Westerner, a North American, American artist who had a fascinating background. And we can start telling stories of Melanesia, which few people know about. I mean, it's amazing. When I travel to Papua New Guinea today and say I'm going to Papua New Guinea, how many North Americans ask me where in Africa is it? And, yeah. So it's wow. Vehicle to really teach them about this amazing part of the planet. But the bottom line is that Headhunt Revisited shines a light on Melanesia, its history, its people, and the traditions. And it illustrates that art, whether it's paintings, photography, filmmaking, are all instrumental in communicating those stories about culture and tradition. So there's a tie-in. We're all artists. And there's all, you know, this point of view. So I'm really excited. I'm, you know, it's been a very, very long project. I had to put it down in 2008 for obvious reasons because funding dried up. And it's only been in the past couple of years I've been able to bring it back to life and with some new point of views. And people, if they want to learn more about this project, can go to headhuntrevisited.org and learn about it. We just held in April a big Kickstarter campaign that was successful, helped us provide seed funding so I can get my grant writers in place. I can pay my editor. I can pay my producer. You know, those are the key things that help us, you know, move forward to bringing this film and book and re-exhibition of all of this stunning artwork back, you know, and get it completed and to the public. So I'm very excited. But it is my legacy project. It's the one I will hopefully leave in, you know, the world's hands to take some new education and learn about an amazing place on the planet.
You know, it's fascinating where our creative skills can take us. I'm sure decades ago, correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably did not predict that you would take this direction.
Absolutely not. You know, I mean, it was the farthest thing from my mind. And until Caroline had written two books and a friend of the family who was dying of cancer, I went to say some goodbyes to Marie. She had this beautiful library and she handed me one of the books that Caroline wrote called New Guinea Headhunt. And that literally, when I read the book, that changed my life and it changed my direction because I knew here was a woman who did amazing things, died in obscurity, and her paintings, her art, have not been seen by the public since 1935. So, you know, it's time to recognize her. And so that's a life dream.
And now you're telling a story that's greater than yourself. That's awesome.
It's huge. It's scary. It's really scary.
Well, we will definitely include that website, headhuntrevisited.org, in the show notes. And are there any other locations where people can find you online, your personal website or any other products of yours?
Absolutely. You know, we remember I talked about networking and social media and having everything available out there possible. Of course, I have my individual website called westmorelandimages.com. And there you can see a whole variety. Everything from my commercial shoots to some of my stock work. There's tear sheets of recent stories in magazines. There's underwater, wildlife, cultural. So it gives a pretty broad view of the type of work that I do. And, of course, I'm on Facebook. And I'm on Facebook as an individual. I'm on Facebook as Westmoreland Images. And I'm on Facebook as Headhunt Revisited. Mm-hmm. So I take, you know, advantage. I'm on Twitter. I'm, you know, although I don't use Twitter as much. I use the Twitter primarily for updates on the Headhunt Revisited project. LinkedIn, all of those kind of avenues, Google+. But I think the most important is one having a good website for both of the representation of my work, and Facebook is big for me.
Excellent. Well, this has just been a fascinating discussion, and I really want to thank you for just sharing your knowledge with us. We really appreciate it.
And you're welcome. I'm really looking forward to seeing this online. Shamira, I'd love to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. It was enjoyable, and I'm also looking forward to really diving into your website and viewing all the other photographers that have had an opportunity to interview with you.